The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number 9, so much more than a producer in the hizzy. What's happening?
Not much, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, Hashem doesn't let me get 5-0s in millions, though, yeah. with the Saints loss there last night. We'll get to that momentarily. First of all, we are packed. Kelly has packed the show with guests. Wow. Ooh, this is an overbooking. No, we're good. Drew Dinsick joining us, as always, on Tuesday. Whale Capper, talk NFL with us, both Week 5 and Week 6 moving ahead. Jake Hahn, there you go, baby. Jake Hahn to talk NHL with us. The NHL season officially began with a couple games last week, as a special numbers game investigation revealed, but it begins in earnest moving forward.
That's right.
That's right. Sort of like what baseball did with those games in, remember, we would do a couple games in Asia back in the day, and then I think actually this year there was a couple that began the season as well, and then the actual season begins several days later for everybody else. Will Hill with all his bets. Tim Murray, we got to talk about an unbelievable weekend in college football. Obviously, Alabama goes down to Vandy being the headline, but five of the nation's top 11 teams go down. Not quite the same as it used to be under the old format, but still an unbelievable weekend with implications. And then Paul Spohr talking baseball. We have a doubleheader in baseball today. Two game threes in the National League. We'll get his thoughts. Obviously, a quadruple header tomorrow, where all four series, Kelly, are knotted up at one apiece. All four best of fives.
Let's go. I'm excited.
That has never happened before.
Really?
Never happened before that all four division round series are one apiece.
Is it bad that I'm far more interested in the National League ones?
No, it's not bad.
You think that's a common take?
You're entitled to your opinion. No, you just mean it from a fan interest standpoint?
Yeah.
I think that's common.
Okay.
Yeah, but more people are into Philly and the Mets and the Dodgers and the Padres. By the way, this Padres game tonight in San Diego, given the two teams' rivalry to begin with.
I can't wait.
But then what happened in game two, Jurickson Profar going nuts on some random fan who threw a ball at him, Manny Machado throwing a ball into the Dodgers dugout. Do you hear about that? Mm-hmm. Dave Roberts found that disrespectful. Jeff Parlay, who was headed to game three in Queens tonight, between the Mets and the Phillies, actually this afternoon, well, evening, East Coast time, he's headed to that. He's also, I guess he had a couple Padres tickets at one point, so the Padres, he's on the Padres mailing list. So the owner management had to send out an email to all the people in attendance.
Oh, the please behave email?
That we are great fans, we will root for our team, we will root against the other team, but there is a line and you can't cross that line tonight. So it honestly, if there was ever, I hate to say that this is what would bring in fans to the baseball tent, because there's a bunch of us who still love baseball and are purists about baseball, but this, I mean, this is about as brawly as it gets for a baseball game.
Yeah, it's a little scary. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited to watch it. But when you get the email from the team, right? It's always like
the preemptive email.
Yeah, you'll see like colleges do that sometimes when it's a big college football rivalry and some stuff's going on. But man, that's when you're getting the email from the owner of we need show how classy and good of fans we are tonight. Yeah. No, they're not.
As long as no one gets hurt, Kelly, I'm all for it.
That's right.
Be at each other's throats in this game. Game three tonight, King versus Bueller, with the Padres now north of a -150 favorite. By the way, our two preflop series bets in this round, the Padres +115, the Royals +180, both in good shape now. All these series de facto best of threes, if you will, with the Royals and Padres, in our circumstances, having home field in quotes at this point, you know, can close it out theoretically on their home field. And by the way, I was asked by Parlay yesterday, which of the best of fours do I think is the best of fives, these division series, do I think is the most likely to conclude in four games, and which is the least likely? I actually think the Padres-Dodgers is the most likely to conclude in four games. I just think the Padres are a better baseball team. They got to win with that pitching advantage today. And I think the least likely is the Phillies and the Mets. Like, that one, to me, seems like it's more headed to five than the others. And I think the Guardians, Tigers, and Yankees, Royals fall somewhere in the middle. The Royals getting back off the schneid yesterday against the Yankees with a 4-2 win, where they got all four of their runs in one frame. And Reagans wasn't even at his best, and the Royals got it done yesterday. And the Tigers, in a great baseball game early yesterday, Three-run jack by Kerry Carpenter off of Emmanuel Clase in the ninth. 3-0. That was all it was. That was all the scoring yesterday in that Tigers-Guardians game. So these series are awesome. It's the best thing going on in sports right now.
What are some of these stories? Like I just heard Grace bring it up on the Visa Morning Line. Kerry Carpenter?
Kerry Carpenter.
The home run from him, and he was working at a grocery store like 2 years ago or something. And then the Yankees are trying some guy out at first base that's never played the position.
Well,
straight out of Moneyball.
He's never played first base before. That's right, Berti. He'd never played before.
What a time to make these decisions.
Yeah. Carpenter, the amazing thing about Carpenter is he's, you know, terrible against lefties. So when righties start, he does not start. But against, like, if you do his splits, his against left and against right splits, he's so much better as, you know, against righties. And then specifically, I don't know what there is to this, but maybe he doesn't like his home par, but against right-handers away, he hits 360.
That's badass.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
In this day and age, it's amazing. And so yesterday, Clase, for whatever reason, decided to throw three straight sliders, and he just jacked the third one out. And so the Tigers, again, all they have to do in this series, I'm being somewhat sarcastic here, just like they did in the wild card series, they got to have one non-Scooble win. So they did what they had to do yesterday and win a Scooble start. So Carpenter came to the rescue. So these are amazing.
I want to be that baseball player, the guy who specializes hitting either lefties or righties, whichever, and then you're, for whatever reason, awesome away.
I would like for you to...
Just to punish fans of opposing fan bases.
I'd like for you to be a loogie. If I had my choice of which Kelly Bidlin specialized player, just a left-handed batter.
Yeah, yeah.
A left-handed pitcher, pardon me, that goes in there and gets one. Back in the day when you were able to only pitch to one batter.
And then get out of it.
They would throw you in. You'd be like this portly left-handed pitcher and you would just.
I'd have sweet walking music or running music. Yeah, I wouldn't run. I'd take my time.
Yeah.
Soak that moment in.
Sorry about calling you portly earlier. Apologize.
It's factual.
Yeah. Football last night. I don't have much to say about this other than somehow the Saints were still in this to cover late.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was kind of a miracle that they were even in that position late, to be honest with you. The reason that they were in that position largely was because when Kansas City was up 16-7 after Butker hit the right goalpost on a 51-yard field goal try, the next time that and by the way, if PI was not flagged deep on Paulson Adebo against Worthy, the next time that Kansas City had the ball, Mahomes, again, deep matriculation to the red zone, and then Mahomes had a pass picked off of a deflection by Colin Saunders, who returned it 36 yards out of the end zone. So at that point, and then the Saints got it down, Carr to Foster Morona, make it 16-13. This is early fourth quarter. So Saints backers against the number somehow still had a shot in this game in the fourth quarter, but then that was quickly erased because took Chiefs five plays to go 68 yards, and that was the end of that, as Juju had a big big game. Juju for 50, the big chunk of that drive. And it ends up being a 26-13 win for the Chiefs, where the Saints lost Derek Carr late in this game. Jake Haener had to finish things out for the New Orleans Saints. 26-13 Chiefs in a game that was not nearly this close, quite frankly. A 460-220 total yards advantage. The Saints were doubled up in first down, 28-14, and they were 4 seconds shy of being doubled up in time of possession. It was really dominant. And the Kansas City Chiefs now go to 5-0. So only the Chiefs and the Vikings are undefeated. The battle for last undefeated still remains between the Chiefs and the Vikings. Congratulations if you have one of those tickets still in play. And then the questions, you know, they even mentioned this on the broadcast last night, or maybe they didn't mention this broadcast, maybe this was a text. I can't even determine where I'm getting all this.
Yeah, no, right.
But Patrick Mahomes is now your short shot for MVP. We don't care about any of that. We just care about the betting market. Patrick Mahomes, your short shot. And if we go to Cleve TA's, our buddy Cleve's MVP guidelines, Patrick Mahomes kind of fits the bill, right? Like, it's the old LeBron thing, right? You could give it to him every year if you wanted to, but he's the short shot now because everybody else who was up there, the Josh Allens and Lamar Jacksons of the world, have kind of, I don't want to say they've taken a step back, but they haven't been at their best, let's say.
Yeah.
And so right now, Patrick Mahomes is plus 330. over at DraftKings. Lamar and Josh Allen both at 6-1. Pardon me. And the only other person in single digits is CJ Stroud at +750. I do want to point out that Jaden Daniels is next at 10-1, which is just awesome. I won't endorse it, but it's awesome. I got a question on Twitter this morning. I want to give proper credit to who it was. I want to say was it Jesse Welch or was it Teasers and Parlays? It was Jesse Welch. Jesse Welch, who asked, is this the year that Andy Reid could perhaps get the Lifetime Achievement Award Coach of the Year honor? The issue with it, while Mahomes still qualifies under Cleve's very tried and true MVP criteria, Andy Reid just doesn't fit the bill for Coach of the Year. Per the Cleve stuff. And if anyone's like, oh, what does Cleve know? Cleve has actually really done these parameters very well. Here's the question from Jesse Welch. He said, Reid Coach of the Year, 20-1. I said it 2 weeks ago when he was 35-1, but even more so now, isn't this the kind of season where he gets the Lifetime Achievement Award with a very well-rounded team? Here's the problem, though. Yes, 15 straight winners of this award have been on a team with at least 9 wins. Okay, that works. The average preseason win total of the last 15 winners is around 7.5 wins, though. No winner in the last 15 years came into the season with a win total of greater than 9.5. So that's an issue. The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 games from the prior year. That's an issue. Nearly half of the last 15 winners were first-year head coaches. That's an issue. And he goes ahead, by the way, in this preseason preview, he says, you can go ahead and eliminate the coaches on the best teams who don't fit these criteria, like a Kyle Shanahan, like a John Harbaugh, like Dan Campbell and Andy Reid. So the Seahawks would have to crater, the Vikings would have to crater, everything would have to happen for this perfect storm of Andy Reid. Drew Dinsick next on the NFL.
The Sports Betting Network.
Since our hockey guide is out and we're talking hockey with Jake Hahn coming up, I only think it's fair that we talk NBA. Basketball season ready to tip off on October 22nd, Kelly.
Let's go.
Special numbers game investigation tells us that. And the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as little as $9.99 for your first month. And reserve your copy of our upcoming NBA betting guide featuring previews and power ratings on all 30 teams, best bets and futures for the VSiN experts, player prop and live betting strategies, plus senior NBA analyst JVT's favorite title bets. JVT will be on with us tomorrow. Give yourself an edge this season. Reserve your copy of the VSiN NBA betting guide. Get a full month of VSiN Pro for just $9.99 at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. It's not often that we have breaking news while we're on air. The news cycle typically begins at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, but today is an exception because per Adam Schefter over at ESPN, the Jets have fired head coach, or former head coach now, Robert Saleh. And to the surprise of not many, I guess, that it was not a question of if, but when, I think most people thought, if this continued, if this mediocrity, and I'm being kind, continued with the New York Jets, or best we got, August 15th was the latest we were able to ascertain what Saleh was for first coach fired. On August 15th, it was 9-1. I don't know who was offering that since, but obviously it would have shortened since. But 9-1 was what he was available on, in the offseason in that market. Drew Dinsick joins us now, whale_capper on Twitter. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, he is the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. He joins us now from the LBC. Drew, what's your reaction to that?
Well, you know why it's early. It's because the Jets are still on London time. And so, they're taking care of business a little earlier in the day than they would normally. This is probably a move that was more precipitated by the loss to the Broncos, I suppose, because otherwise, the other two Jets losses in their 2-3 start to the season, one of them was relatively explainable with the opener against, an informed Niners team. And then, they were live in that game in London with a pretty, impressive effort to stay in that game and to give themselves an opportunity for a comeback. So I definitely didn't get the sense that there was quit in the air in the locker room. But this is the Aaron Rodgers show. You signed, this is what you signed up for when you bring him in the first place. A lot of the roster moves and the roster constructions have his fingerprints all over them. To the degree that the offensive coordinator was, in my opinion, part of the problem, and that's an Aaron Rodgers guy, and Saleh's not. That also is an issue for kind of longevity as a head coach. And there was a moment offshore, at least, where, you know, first coach fired and coach of the year odds were up, first market to pop. Saleh was the favorite in both. And it was hilarious.
That's right.
It was like, this is a make or break season for the Jets. Either they make it and he's your coach of the year contender, or they don't, and he's gone. And he ended up drifting pretty aggressively in that market, as it seemed very likely that Doug Peterson was going to lose his job on either end of going to London. But no, it turns out the Jets make the move first. I'm hanging on by a thread here to find out who the interim coach is. If it's Hackett, I don't know.
What do you say at that point?
It's Hackett, I don't know what you say, but pretty clearly, like, the writing was on the wall to a degree, in that, you know, Rodgers and Saleh were talking past each other with the media clips that they were giving the last 2 weeks in terms of his cadence and what that meant, and offensive preparation and the route trees and all the players talking past Saleh in the media was a bad sign.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's what was in my head as you were talking, which is that couldn't have helped, right? The fact that Saleh comes out and says, we need to change the cadences, which is, we need to change the cadence pattern, which Aaron Rodgers has been using from the dawn of time. And Aaron Rodgers immediately said, maybe we should hold people accountable instead. Or we could, the exact quote was, or we could hold people accountable. And in just that Aaron Rodgers snarky kind of way. And that couldn't have helped. Yeah. That couldn't have helped. You're absolutely right. No.
It will be the DC who's taking over interim head coaching responsibilities. That, according to Peter Schrager, Jeff Ulbrich there.
Okay. Interesting. There was, if you listen loud enough to people in the building, I think there was some discontent about the degree of preparation Saleh was putting in to his job over the course of this time window. I mean, ultimately, the record that his career record there, 20-36, it's a direct reflection of a lot of Zach Wilson's starts. And yes, if you want to hold him as the head coach ultimately responsible for the failure of the development of Zach Wilson, that's fine. I think in general, there were a lot of factors that really kind of caused this iteration of the Jets to fail. And, it's crazy that we're even kind of at the point where the season feels like it's over for them, or at least over to the point of firing their coach. Nobody in the NFL right now has distinguished themselves. Like, there's like the, even the 5-0 Vikings and 5-0 Chiefs, like, you can look at those teams with under a microscope and be like, there are flaws here. Like, the Chiefs are getting it done with guys who are out of the league.
It's amazing.
At the skill position players, skill positions. And, like, that may be sustainable, maybe. But there's a lot of problems with a lot of the good teams in the NFL. And I think I was talking to Andy about this last night as we were kind of reflecting on our power numbers. Like, usually by the time we get to week 6, I've got a few teams where I'm like willing to say, oh yeah, this team is like 6.5, maybe 7 points better than an average team. Right now, my best teams in the NFL are like 4.2, 4.3. Like, there are no like true standout screamers that, these teams are good. I think the idea that Circus Survivor's practically over is like good evidence of that, beyond just the fact that power ratings would suggest that the top is just not that impressive this year.
Well, let me sort of riff on that, because we did get again a tweet this morning about an hour ago from MTW24 golfer, who said Drew has San Francisco, as do I, by the way, headed into this past week, as did I. Drew has San Francisco as number one ranked team. Can you guys go through that process? They're 2-3 with wins versus two bottom six teams.
Yeah. I mean, the answer is I still believe in the scheme that they're running, and I still believe that they have the skill position players to execute that scheme. I believe in Brock Purdy as a top five quarterback, at least from the standpoint of, consistent offensive efficiency. And it's a team that, if you have a quarterback, an offensive scheme that is good, and skill position players who are good right now in the NFL, that puts you at the front of the line. Like, that's kind of all there is to say.
Yeah.
I have questions about their pass protection, but ultimately I excuse those, because Shanahan's scheme is pretty pass rush agnostic in general. And I have questions about their defense, particularly the depth of the D line, I think is a huge question mark and problem. But I also look at their, you know, kind of team rating as only likely to go up on defense as they get good players back here over the next few weeks. Drake Greenlaw may be the most important of those and really fortifying the front seven. I mean, to me, it's less of a reflection of the results than it is just, well, how do you rate this team going forward? The Niners results are also a fair bit misleading. Like they had, if you sum up the win probability as an integral across the entire game against the Rams, that was like a 95% win game. If you sum up the win probability against the Cardinals, that was like an 85-90% win probability game for that team. They just absolutely bottled the endings in both of those cases. And week two at the Vikings on a short week, getting a little bit surprised by the Vikings scheme, I can excuse that as well. It would be, this week is obviously exceptionally important. I laid it with the San Francisco on the open here. I think that the Seahawks defensive injuries, basically the Seahawks defense is a cluster injury. And I think that is a bad sign for, a team like going up against the Niners in a desperate spot here. Yeah, this next few weeks really will distinguish the Niners, I think, as the best team in the NFL. It's important to note that it almost isn't even that impressive to say that this team is the best team in the NFL for me right now, because the margins between the teams at the top are very, very narrow. My distance between San Francisco, Kansas City, Baltimore, are very fine margins, and then teams like Buffalo and Houston and Minnesota on the next tier are a tiny step behind. So you have like a cluster of seven at the top right now that on any given day anyone can win, anyone can lose.
Well, just two reactions to that. One, I too, when I did guessing lines yesterday, the very first game out of the shoot, right, is the Thursday night game, I too loved San Francisco laying the points on the road. And to your point about the power rankings, and I'm not being prisoner of the moment, I know this to be a fact, through 5 weeks of an NFL season, four for some teams, right, I have never had three teams with either two or three losses already in my top five, talking about San Francisco, Baltimore, and Green Bay. And that just shows you what the league is. The fact that those teams, even with all those, warts thus far in terms of results, are still cream of the crop when it comes to this league. Pete Rozelle's dream of parity, never more apparent than it is now. Drew's thoughts on week six moving forward, his bets next, right here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you the type of player who's looking to get down $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market? Perhaps you're looking to get your in-game play instantly accepted. Introducing SportTrade, the app that's going to change sports betting forever. Minus 104 lines instead of the typical minus 110 instant in-game betting. And a concierge player service, SportTrade, perfect for those who want a premium betting experience. SportTrade live in New Jersey, Colorado, Iowa, and yes, Arizona. Live, coming to Virginia soon. The Commonwealth of Virginia soon. Download Sport Trade. Use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on each wager in your first week. Terms apply. Got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Our old buddy Matt Buckhalter plus EV Analytics on Twitter chiming in this morning saying, as discussed in August with Gil on A Numbers Game, there was a point during the summer, as Drew just mentioned, where Saleh was favored for coach of the year and for first fired. Unfortunately, that variance is not showing itself in their mediocre 2-3 record. Not a great year at all for all regular season win totals so far, he says. Matt's strategy is same coach, same coordinator is a good thing for teams in terms of season wins. It's been a tried and true over.
Yep.
Also, new head coach and new offensive coordinator has also been a good thing for him, betting season win totals over. But when it's a first-time either coach or coordinator with a coach or coordinator that has been there, when it's mismatched, in other words, then it has not been a good thing. But he's saying so far not so good in that with that approach. But we're only through 5 weeks. For those who missed it, Robert Saleh, the first NFL coach fired this year, went down about 20 minutes ago per Adam Schefter, or at least that's when it was reported. And those August first coach fired numbers, Kelly, Dennis Allen was the short shot at plus 275 at that time of the Saints. Mike McCarthy was 6-1. Todd Bowles was 8-1. And then it was both Robert Saleh and Brian Daboll at 9-1, followed by Nick Sirianni at 10-1. There you go.
Man, it feels early. I mean, it's, yeah. I know that team is dysfunctional.
Where was Antonio Pierce? 14-1, Antonio Pierce.
We are 5 weeks in. Yeah.
I want that information if I run into Coach Pierce. And I was like, hey, Coach.
Hey!
You didn't hit.
You didn't win.
Drew Dinsick at Whale_Capper, kind enough to hang with us for a second segment here, as he always does on Tuesdays, to talk National Football League. Week six, then, beyond the Niners, what did you like? What have you bet so far?
Let me go back one half step, because you do bring up our good friend, Matt plus EV.
Yes.
Matt and I come from the same school of thought when it comes to win total bets, which is that the distribution of outcomes tends to be much broader than the bookmaking, than the median lines would suggest, which means that there's inherently value in the alt win totals. This year actually feels like win total Armageddon, where everything is going to be more compressed than usual, and every team is going to be 7-10 to 10-7. I'm holding my breath. I don't have a ton of exposure in the win total markets anymore, just because it's tough to get down meaningful limits in the alt markets. But this does feel like a little bit of win total Armageddon is on our doorstep.
Well, this is kind of interesting, because you are the guy, and I always give you credit for this, Drew. You were the first guy to come on here and say, alternate season win total market in the NFL. Is if you could only, I'll sort of enhance it. I was saying, if you could only bet one market, that might be it. Because the quote from you was, the notion that those could be priced properly is a fallacy, right? There's no way that those alternate season win total prices can be priced accurately by sports books. And you're saying, because usually the breadth of the variance is so much greater than they actually reflect in those numbers. But off air, you were just talking about this, what you were just saying moments ago. Give the real life example of what you were saying off air, which is you believe that if a team is 10-7 this year, what could happen?
Well, I'm projecting right now, what will the season standings be in the NFC? And your Commanders,
yes,
come up for me number two as a 10.3 win team. So it is very conceivable in my mind that the 2 seed could be a 10 win team from the NFC East. The 3 seed could be a 10-win team from the NFC South, and the 4 seed could be the 10-win 49ers. None of that would shock me. Right now, the 49ers have put themselves in a terrible position as far as tie breaks go. They are really, really, really going to struggle to get out of the 4 seed, even if they, assuming they can even get to 10 wins, I guess. It is very, very probable in my mind that you're going to have a cluster of six to 10 realistically teams. Some of them will fall out because of injuries, I suppose, but there's like 10 teams right now fighting for 6 spots in the NFC playoff picture who are going to fall between 9-10 wins. And you could have a situation where a 10 win team is a 2 seed and a 9 win team is out of the playoffs in that mix of teams. And I would not be shocked.
Hey, NFL, everybody.
Parody, you got it.
We bet this stuff. But you're so right. Survivor, again, 98.45% of all Survivor entries are out after 5 weeks. That is almost impossible. It's almost impossible, and yet here we are. All right, week six. We got some time to talk about all your week six bets. What did you come up with?
So week six sides, I got a handful in so far. I haven't played much as far as totals yet, but I can talk about where my numbers are, at least at first pass relative to market. For sides, I mentioned that I played San Francisco -3. I make that one 4.8. That is mostly based on concerns about the Seattle defense and player availability. That side of the ball, really, they are down to the absolute dregs. And I don't know how you're stopping San Francisco in that spot in light of who's available. The other sides that really stood out to me as far as could not get there and in general, just kind of intrigued and pretty bullish on your matchups are chalky. In a year where chalk can't win whatsoever, I laid it with both Green Bay and Atlanta this week. you have hugely positive advantages for both of these offenses against their opposing defenses. Green Bay is maybe going to be one of the kind of quieter sides of the week that I'm really excited about. I laid the 5 there. I make that one 7. And again, like the positives of their offense against Arizona's defense are just, you know, flashing sirens on my screen as I look at the matchups, just matchup advantages. And same goes for Atlanta with extra rest against a Carolina team that right now is, you know, trotting out a JV defense, I think is set up well to have a lot of offensive success. I don't know that they're going to, I went waffled on this one back and forth between laying it with Atlanta and playing the over. Because I do worry a bit about Carolina having one last kind of a last gasp offensive effort against an Atlanta defense I don't have a ton of respect for. But in the end, I think laying 6.5 is fair. I think that one should be on the other side of 7. And then the two dogs that stood out to me are both kind of tough to square with what the market is making right now for what a buy is worth. I can't get anywhere close to this line for Detroit at 3.5 effectively. So Dallas for me, and it feels terrible, but, that one is really, really tough for me to get to. Some people I think are maybe just a hair high on Detroit right now.
What do you have this as?
I'm at 1.5.
Okay. Still in favor of Detroit though, I assume.
Still in favor of Detroit, but not by much. And honestly, the 1.5 is almost all that's almost all added win probability because they're coming off the bye. Just if this was a neutral game, I think this should probably be a pick. Maybe I need to scratch my head a little bit about how I'm pricing Dallas's defense. Maybe Pittsburgh was not necessarily a true test, but, people are, I think, a little high on Detroit right now. And then the one that I'm like, I really struggled hitting submit on this because number one, I just haven't watched much of this team this year in detail. And I haven't bet either of these teams all year, was Denver hosting the Chargers. What exactly have the Chargers done to be warranting 3-point favorites on the road?
I had the same reaction. I had Denver favored, I believe, yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're maybe healthy, Drew.
I guess, you want to do a health adjustment bump and a rest bump coming off the bye for the Chargers? Great. How are they scoring points on this Denver defense? I mean, the Denver is going to literally have to have their exhale letdown game after a huge win against the Raiders if the Chargers are going to catch them by more than 3, I think. I mean, the Chargers defense is hugely suspect. The Chargers personnel is not as good as people were thinking heading into this season. The bye is only going to fix so much when you have no skill position players to really threaten a Denver defense with. So, I played Denver +3 there. And if anything, if we get kind of what we're expecting as far as an injury report from Denver, then I may be double dipping with the money line for them as well.
Yeah, I had Denver -1.5 in my guesses. That will probably be a contest pick. Any totals real quick in 20 seconds?
The totals that stood out for me are I'm pointing at an over in New England, Houston, although boy, do I need to figure out if Drake May is going to play or not. If Drake May is playing, I'm on over in Houston, New England. The game of the week, Washington, Baltimore. My numbers say bet the under. And yeah, that's going to be a tough one again to click the button on, but I'm on under, I think, in Washington, Baltimore.
Let's go, Skins. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it as always.
All right, best luck, guys.
Drew Dinsing at whale_capper. Let's talk some hockey on the other side with Jay Kahn. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game. Un juego de números.
Skill I had to hesitate there.
Skill Alexander. I did that for our buddy on Twitter who was like, it's not partido, it's juego. Un juego de números. It's Skill Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Let's talk some hockey. For God's sakes, let's talk some hockey. Let's bring in our buddy who's the co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL. It's our buddy Jay Kahn at jhahn4. That's H-A-H-N and the number 4 on Twitter. Jake, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. It's about time. It's been way too long since I've been on with you chatting a little bit of hockey. And this is this is probably my favorite time of the year. I mean, you could argue April in that calendar, but this is just amazing, guys. We've got football basically every single day for the next, what, month and a half, if you include some of the greasy college football games in the middle of the week. And we've got playoff baseball going on, basketball around the corner. And like you mentioned, Gil, hockey. We officially dropped the puck on the North American calendar tonight. We did get a couple games in the weekend in Prague in the Global Series. But this is one of my favorite times to be a sports bettor and a sports fan.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I sense your excitement, and I want to get to all your picks. But before we get to all your season longs here, and by the way, we have, by request, we have an October most points. We're going to riff off what I did in baseball, most wins every month, and we're going to start with most points from Jake in October. We'll get to all that. I just want to ask you a question. The Florida Panthers are the Stanley Cup champions. They beat the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, Connor McDavid is a huge betting favorite for the Hart Trophy. Everybody seems to be betting. If you look at what sportsbooks are reporting, people love the Oilers this year in terms of the outrights. Why is it that the Panthers get no love by comparison?
That's a great question, Gil. And they did lose a couple of pieces in the offseason, which I think a lot of people are maybe pointing to and saying, okay, are they going to take a bit of a step back? They lose Brandon Montour specifically on the back end. But for the most part, the core group that won the Stanley Cup, and that being said, made it to two straight Stanley Cup finals. It's been 2 years. We could be talking about a three-peat here for Florida. They were close a couple years ago, losing to Vegas. So this is a team that's kind of figured out the roadmap. We talk about that a lot, that playoff hockey is so different. And once you get there, there's some teams that are just built for it, and there's some teams that just aren't. There's teams that are built more for the regular season. And I think Florida's proven to us the last couple of years that they're a team that's built for playoff hockey. So when it comes down to it, yeah, they're a team that I'd be willing to back once again. Come playoff time, we always point to it's just tough to run it back again. You play a lot of extra hockey, the toll on the body, mentally, physically, whatever it might be. But we have seen teams go on extended runs. Pittsburgh did it for a while. Chicago, if you want to go further back, LA had some good runs. So we have seen, great core groups come together and have extended, 3 to 5 year windows. And it looks like Florida could be that team right now.
Oilers are the short shot to win the Stanley Cup, 8-1. Panthers are 10-1. Always look for the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs are 13-1. They're the fifth short shot, trying to break the drought since 1967. Toronto, I'm talking to you, Toronto. I'm rooting for you. You didn't go in any of those directions. Who did you end up betting for Stanley Cup champs this year?
Yeah, well, there is a bit of a Leafs tax, I find. Like, it's tough to back a team like that hasn't had any sort of success in the playoffs outside of winning one round at the number that you usually get. So they tend to be a popular team just because they are a popular team. So you have to pay a bit of a tax on them. I'd rather go to their division rivals a little further down the board, guys, in the Boston Bruins. I mean, I just sung the praises of Florida, and all these teams play in the same division. It is probably the best division in all of hockey. And always out of the East, we see a team come out of the Atlantic Division. So I'm going to bank on that being the Boston Bruins this year. Guys, they made some aggressive moves in the offseason. They bring in Elias Lindholm down the middle of the ice. They bring in Nikita Zadorov to shore up the back end a little bit. They get their star goaltender signed at the last minute in Jeremy Swayman as well. So you can knock these moves maybe 2-3 years down the road and say the Bruins roster is going to be older, maybe a little bit overpaid. And I could hear that argument. But strictly for this year, I think they made some key improvements to get over the hump. And it's not going to be easy through that Atlantic side of the bracket, guys. But I think we're getting a really good number on the Bruins. And I'd also sprinkle on them 5-1 to win the Atlantic. Because I do think Florida could maybe play it a little bit easier in the regular season. And Toronto and Tampa are your other two teams that you're going head-to-head. So 5-1 Bruins to win the Atlantic. And I think you could still find some 18-1s to win the Stanley Cup as well.
Talk to me about the Predators, who obviously made some huge acquisitions. They were kind of the winner of the offseason. Jonathan Marchessault, of course, famous for being here in Vegas. Steven Stamkos of Lightning fame. So they kind of won the offseason, didn't they?
They did, right? And I mean, you guys probably talk about this in all sorts of sports. Sometimes you don't want to be the team that won the offseason, right? They don't hand out the trophy for winning an offseason. But the Preds did win the offseason. I mean, they made the big splashes. Part of me feels like, okay, did you do a little bit too much? Did you have to bring in both of those forwards? I like what they did on the back end. But at the end of the day, they are better this year than they were last year. And you can't really argue against that. Maybe it takes them a little bit of time to get acclimated, find the right line combinations. But Stamkos is a guy that's been in this league for a long time. I don't think it'll take him very long to get going there. Marchessault as well, a veteran, a lot of games, Shea on the back end. So they brought in some big pieces, and I'm not shocked that they're a team that people are rushing to back. The only problem is, just similar to what I talked about with Boston, Florida, Toronto, they play in the same division as Colorado and Dallas, two powerhouses. So it's going to be really difficult for them, I think, to make it through that central side of the bracket. But there's no doubt that the Preds have thrown their hat in the ring and made some significant improvements this offseason.
I love that Jake is here to talk hockey season longs, but he has told us, Jordan, sort of tacitly, that he's a San Diego Padres backer as well, wearing his Padres baseball hat up there in Toronto.
You know which future bet I have in the baseball playoffs, yes, by the hat that I'm wearing. So let's go Pods.
Let's go Pods.
Let's go get them tonight.
Yeah, I got them in a World Series matchup or two as well. Okay, Hart Trophy, I just mentioned that when I was talking about Connor McDavid, but you're not going McDavid. Who did you decide to bet for Hart Trophy?
I'm going to go to the same guy I bet last year, guys, Nikita Kucherov. I just like the number a lot here. I understand, I mean, going against McDavid, trying to make a case against that guy is almost impossible. If he stays healthy and has his, you know, ceiling McDavid season, he probably wins the award. So it's hard to argue against that. But if you're looking for some value down the board and you're looking for guys, I think there's only a select few players that can actually go toe-to-toe and put up the numbers comparable to McDavid and build a case to actually beat him. And Nikita Kucherov is one of those guys. He had a Hart Trophy type season last year. He just lost to Nathan MacKinnon, who had an unbelievable season as well. It was a great toe-to-toe race between the two, and we're getting basically the exact same number this year on Kucherov. So if Tampa is going to do anything significant, guys, Kucherov is going to be in on 50%, maybe more, of the offense in Tampa. And that's usually what a Hart Trophy winner has to do, that you look at it and say, well, if you took Kucherov off the Lightning, they're probably not a playoff team. I could see that being the narrative by the end of this year's season. And I think at 20-1, it's worth a play on a guy that's shown he can go toe-to-toe with the top dogs in this award.
All right, you did not leave Toronto off your bets entirely. The Frank J. Selke Trophy, which is awarded to the player who demonstrates the most skill in the defensive component of the game. You went Austin Matthews.
Yeah, I think it's about time Austin Matthews wins this award. He got a little bit of love last year getting nominated. It has become Alexander Barkov's award, and I mean, I'm the biggest Barkov fan out there, and I'm glad he has been getting the recognition. He's kind of taken over the role from Patrice Bergeron as the best two-way forward in the National Hockey League, and everybody seems to agree on it. So he's priced accordingly. I think he's almost close to even money now at this point. So there's really no value in Barkov, in my opinion, in a season-long award where injuries could play a factor. I think Matthews should be priced way closer to Sasha Barkov. The offense that Matthews can put up, combined with his defensive acumen, I think at some point he is going to win one of these awards. And around 8-1, you can maybe find some 9-1s out there. I think a very fair price on Matthews.
Okay, I mentioned that in Major League Baseball season, every month I did most wins. We did it 6 months, all 6 months, won it once, should have won it twice, which is a whole nother story. But it ended up being profitable because of that win on the Astros in the month of June. You were asked by someone, hey, let's do most points every month in hockey. So you have indulged us for the month of October. DraftKings has this available, most points in the month of October in the NHL. The Devils are the short shot by a long, by a big margin here, I should say. Devils plus 170. Then the Oilers and the Avalanche are the only others in single digits. Who did you end up with here?
Well, the Devils have been spotted 4 points, right? They go to Prague, they beat the Sabres twice. So I think you can actually kind of take advantage of that a little bit in the market and say, okay, well, they're priced that way because they already have two wins, but maybe we could find some more value down the board. Edmonton's a team that has started slow the last couple of seasons. I don't know if the same thing is going to happen this year, but they tend to take a month or so to kind of get into the season a little bit. So I would maybe avoid them at the top of the board. The Panthers do make a lot of sense, guys. I know the number's not great, but when you look at it, we saw Vegas do it last year. They came right hot out of the gates after winning the Stanley Cup and then kind of hit a little bit of a speed bump. So I think the Panthers, you know, you raise the banner, you get excited. That can maybe keep you going for about a month. I have a lot of interest in them. Winnipeg at 35-1 jumped out to me as well, just based on their schedule. The only problem is they only play 10 games. So they probably have to go like 9-1 or something in that range. So I'm going to settle on the Panthers here, guys, 14-1. I know it's not the most exciting play on the board, but I do think they can ride that wave, raising the banner for at least a month and get off to a nice start, bank some points here.
Well, it makes sense. They got the head start. So there's a reason for it not being the sexiest pick because they do have a head start on that. And again, with the DraftKings, with MLB, they did dead heat. So I assume they have dead heats as well here if there is a tie. Jake, you got me pumped for hockey. Appreciate it, man.
Let's go. I'm excited to come back on throughout the season, guys. A lot of fun.
Love it. Jake Hahn, everybody, right here on A Numbers Game. We're coming back. We'll talk with Will Hill next.